Hello and welcome to The Fine Print, the double scrutiny of the story and its coverage with me, I'm your Rafa. But first, as always, let's start with a look at the big print. The big print goes. The end of the beginning. New hope, old weariness at Mideast talks. Arab Scout Annapolis Conference will bring peace. History mistrust, hobble Mideast leaders. And Bush calls Arabs Abbas Olmert to White House. After Annapolis. Help us track the fine print. We're joined all the way live from London by Hisham El Sol, a member of the Executive Committee of the Council for Arab-British Understanding. From New York by Mohammed Bazzi, Counsel on Foreign Relations. From Gaza by Dr. Assad Abu Sharak, Palestinian political analyst. But let's start with our first pick tonight from BBC, an article titled Annapolis, the End of the beginning. It goes, Annapolis is the end of the beginning for the new Middle East peace process, not necessarily the beginning of the end. Council on Foreign Relations, New York, Mohammed Bazzi.
Yes, well, at the end of this meeting, hello?
All right, hello, while we have you loud and clear, I was wondering if you heard the title of our first pick tonight, Annapolis, the end of the beginning, not necessarily the beginning of the end. Do you see eye to eye with BBC article?
Not entirely. I think both sides will now go back and they're going to attempt to have talks on December 12th. And if that proceeds, I mean, I think there's some hope for some progress in the next few months. I doubt that there's going to be an agreement by the end of the Bush administration in 14 months.
Well, the BBC article says that was the easy bit, the 44-nation conference. Now for the hard work, all the old unresolved issues have to be tackled. The borders of Israel and the new state of Palestine, Jerusalem, Israeli settlements, Palestinian refugees. So let's go to Hisham El Sol, joining us from London.
Well, as you have mentioned, there are a lot of things to be resolved. Not many has been put on the agenda. It's a general discussion. And specifics were not really, they were absent, unless we know, as we always know, that the devil is in the details, and we don't have any details, but at least it's a beginning, hopefully.
All right, now let's take a look at another article from BBC, which says Mideast media is skeptical of Annapolis as Middle East peace talks are underway in the U.S. There's widespread uncertainty in the regional press about what to expect. Some Palestinian observers criticize police for trying to suppress anti-conference demonstrations in Ramallah, while Israeli papers remain largely skeptical. So both sides back home skeptical about this peace effort. Let's go to Gaza, where we're joined by Dr. Assad Abu Sharak, Palestinian political analyst. Do you share the skepticism?
Yeah, of course, very much. Let me first ask a few questions. Is Annapolis the right place to discuss the Palestinian question? Is Bush an honest broker for peace in the Middle East and in this part of the world? Is Israel interested, let alone ready, for peace now? I think the answer to these questions is no. In Annapolis, they didn't discuss anything. The aim of this conference is not a Palestinian aim, or it's not going to achieve any Palestinian goals. It has a tacit American agenda, and it serves, undoubtedly, the American interest. It doesn't serve the Palestinian interest. Then Bush is not and can never be an honest broker, simply because Bush has always sided with Israel, and he sent a letter to Sharon telling him, denying us our right of return, denying that Jerusalem is the capital of Palestine, denying that supporting the expansion and the building of more Israeli settlements on the West Bank and in Palestine. Bush committed more crimes. He must be tried, actually, as a war criminal, not to be treated as an honest broker for peace. And this is why every Palestinian here is pessimistic, and this conference is not going to achieve anything. It was only a razzmatazz for fish eaters, and it's sort of fanfare, probably funfair.
Let's take a look at what papers in the Middle East have to say, according to this BBC article that says Palestinian, meaning Palestinian papers, Omar Hilmi al-Ghul in al-Hayat al-Jadida. It says security forces made a grave mistake defending law and order by forcefully dispersing the anti-Annapolis demonstrations. It would have been better to be lenient with the demonstrations. Hani Habib and West Bank-based Al-Ayam says the Palestinian Authority made two mistakes at the conference. Firstly, it accepted the U.S. invitation that incorrectly invited President Abbas as the president of the Palestinian Authority rather than the president of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO. Secondly, the quelling of the anti-Annapolis demonstrations. Let's go to Mohammed Bazzi for his reaction to these two comments, and then on with the rest of skeptic comments from papers around the Middle East.
I agree that it was a mistake for the security forces in the West Bank to deal this way with the protesters. I think it would have been a chance for the security forces, who are mostly controlled by Fatah and the West Bank, it would have been a chance to show that they will express that they're willing to accept differences of opinion. And it was a setback, and it's a problem, and Mahmoud Abbas should deal with it when he returns. On the other comment, there's a lot of intra-Palestinian conflict at this point between Fatah and Hamas. Is Mahmoud Abbas the president of the Palestinian Authority? He is. He was elected into that role. He's also the head of the PLO. I don't see the reason to nitpick these questions of title. I mean, it doesn't really get us anywhere.
Right now, let's go to Wall Street Journal with an article titled "A Parsing of Annapolis and What Comes Next." The article starts, "The good news is that the three main players at the peace conference in Annapolis entered the process with weak positions that fuel what seem to be genuine desires for the bold deal they hope to reach next year. The bad news is they enter the resulting negotiations with weak positions that only increase the odds against success." Asad Abu Sharik, I'd like to have your take here. Do you see Mahmoud Abbas as representing the Palestinians here in this peace conference with over 1.5 million people right now in Gaza under Hamas control, what is called by the media two states in Palestine, and some saying we should perhaps have a three-state solution here. Do you see Mahmoud Abbas as representing all Palestinians?
No, Mahmoud Abbas, of course, was elected by the Palestinians here. He was democratically elected as a president of the Palestinian National Authority, and he was democratically elected as I state. But there was a mistake when they sent the letter to him, the letter of invitation from the Americans, because the Americans addressed him as in his capacity as president of the national, not only national Palestinian National Authority. They addressed him as a leader or president of Palestinian Authority, not national. Even the word national is not mentioned. So, I think if we take these circumstances now, the division between and the Palestinian within the Palestinian National Authority between Gaza and Ramallah, I think he is weakened. And in the first place, this conference shouldn't be held, and Mahmoud Abbas shouldn't have gone, not a single Arab country should have gone to Annapolis, because this is not, as we said, the right place for us to discuss our problem, to discuss the Palestine cause. They must have gone to the United Nations. We need, what we need is EUN supervised conference, not meeting like what happened in Annapolis, in order to implement, I repeat, implement the UN resolutions related to the Palestinian question, namely the right of return, resolution 194, which calls for the return of every single Palestinian who was dismissed and evicted by the Zionist gangs in 1948, and the Palestinians have been ever since dreaming of and yearning for return to their own countries from which they were evicted by the Israelis. Also, if they are talking about a state, of course, in 1947 there was a UN resolution number 181, which calls for a Palestinian state. The Israeli state was established, and the Palestinian state is yet to be established on around 40% of the total area of Palestine. To my mind, what I prefer is to see one democratic state in the whole territory of Palestine, in mandated Palestine.
Now, back to Wall Street Journal, the Annapolis conference produced a, quote, joint understanding read aloud by President Bush, but shorn of details or even mention of any of the issues that fettered previous peacemaking. So, Hisham El-Sol, none of the so-called core issues were addressed here. That's why so many are calling it only a photo op for the president, the U.S. president at home.
Well, the idea is, according to what I believe that Bush has called for this meeting, is to have generalities and 40 opportunities, and also perhaps to put a beginning of the of a process, which we know what the process means, that the Palestinians have been suffering because of a process, a peace process, since maybe over 60 years. But I think, let's say that this is an attempt towards resolving the conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict. And I agree with the gentleman who mentioned before with regard to the United Nations. I think the United Nations should have been the right place where to treat such a matter, because Israel has been flouting blatantly the United Nations resolutions since its inception 60 years ago. I believe also that if United States is serious about resolving this issue, or the conflict that is, they should go and not only invite 40 or 44 countries to support this thing, but also the whole world. The whole world actually is in support of resolving the resolution. Therefore, they should have gone to the United Nations, and the United States should have put its all, weight behind the United Nations to resolve it. That's my open, honest opinion.
All right. Now, of course, the United Nations had this to say, and here's another article late today: peace process without Hamas not viable. UN, and the article appears in Reuters. Let's zoom in a bit, see what it has to say. It says, a Palestinian peace process that does not include Hamas cannot be viable, the head of the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency said on Wednesday after talks in the United States to try and revive the effort. Karen Abu Zaid, head of the UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, said more political pressure was needed to resolve the split between rival Palestinian factions, Fatah, which controls the West Bank, and Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip. Mohammed Bazzi, do you see any resolution to this huge conflict sans Hamas, exclusive of Hamas?
I mean, one way to resolve this conflict is to agree on early parliamentary elections, for Fatah and Hamas to agree on a new framework for an election, to call elections perhaps next year. I think that would then settle the question of who has more support on the ground. Now, realistically, Fatah may not agree to this because Fatah probably fears losing even more parliamentary seats to Hamas. And I agree with the article and the honorable official who argues that really a concrete process on the ground is going to require Hamas's involvement because on the ground Hamas does control Gaza, and on the ground it also has significant support in other parts of the West Bank. Now, of course, this brings up the involvement of Hamas brings up a lot of other related issues, one being the exiled Hamas leadership in Damascus and what role and opinion that leadership will have on these kinds of discussions. Of course, we know that the Hamas leadership in Damascus rejected the entire basis of the Annapolis summit, although one positive thing is that Syria did participate in the summit, and Syria does have an interest in recovering the Golan Heights and in having discussions and talks with Israel on that. I think one of the big mistakes that the Bush administration made in this in setting up Annapolis was not to put Israeli-Syrian negotiations as an important item on the agenda, to leave it to the very end and to leave it very open and vague wording about Israeli Syrian track and Israeli Lebanese track. So those issues become interrelated. The issue of Hamas sitting down to some form of negotiation, I think, has a lot to do with what Syria might up the next steps that Syria might take.
Speaking of Syria's participation, here is Ynet and Israeli paper opinion by Ron Ben Yishai saying Bush won the jackpot. We'll get back to Bush winning the jackpot according to this writer. But further down it says the biggest loser, it says, on the other hand, the big loser is Syria. So he believes, the writer believes, that the big winner is Bush and the big loser is Syria. And he says Bashar Assad sent a representative to Annapolis in the hopes that during the meeting, participants will recognize Damascus' interest returning the Golan Heights and reinstating Syria's special status in Lebanon, or at least make note of them in a respectful manner. Yet Bush, Abbas, and Olmert, whose speeches marked the core of this meeting, did not meet Syria's expectations. The American president did not even address the Syrian demand to discuss the Golan Heights. Assad Abu Sharik, Dr. Sharik, do you see Syria as the biggest loser here?
To tell you the truth, the biggest loser is peace. The biggest loser is Syria and Palestine. The Palestinians and the Syrians and the Arabs, simply because they attended such a conference. They should not have, in the first place, attended the conference, simply because the U.S. is not, as I stated, neither the U.S. nor Bush is an honest broker for peace, and they wanted just to normalize relations. Israel is going to emerge as the winner because Israel will win a normalization with some Arab countries. Probably they were focusing Saudi Arabia, and America will carry out its tacit agenda, which is probably to attack Iran and Syria and resistance movements in the Arab world. So, and this is why, and then they are not going to relinquish our lands, not only in Syria, Golan, or the Arab lands, or Shab'a plantations, the Lebanese Shab'a plantations, or even the Palestinian lands, because this conference is too general to be true. Nothing emerges out of this conference. It serves, as I stated, the American interest and the Syrian interest. So this nothing will emerge out of this. This is why I call upon the Arab countries now to hold an Arab summit conference to boycott all their relations with Israel and to lift the siege which is imposed upon the Palestinian people. And some Arab countries are participating in this siege. America is imposing the siege. Israel is imposing the siege. America is encouraging Israel to continue its occupation of Palestine and to continue its ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. So the Arabs, not only the Syrians, the Arabs, the Palestinians, the Lebanese, as long as they sit with the Americans and the Israelis and they accept their narrative and discuss with them peace, when these people are not interested in peace and they are not going to offer peace, they are offering just death and more occupation and siege. But in the same time, Bush will say to the whole world that he is a man of peace, and then he will improve his own image and the image of the Americans. Probably this is a good propaganda for the presidential election for the Republican Party.
Now, Hisham al-Sulf, do you see George Bush, the big winner of all of this, according to this article, the American administration gambled and won the jackpot in every respect? The Annapolis conference is a Bush success story, and particularly Condoleezza Rice success story. Both were able to achieve their targets, an impressive diplomatic show of force vis-a-vis radical Islam and Iran, which are now presented as isolated and lacking legitimacy in international and Middle Eastern arena. Do you see Bush and Condoleezza Rice as sole winners of this?
Well, I think that the world is a bit more intelligent than that. They can read between the lines what Bush is trying to do and Condoleezza Rice is trying to do. I feel that they have, of course, they have, I think Bush won a little bit on that front, and the American policy seemed to be gained a little bit and reinstalled the image of Bush that has been waning away because of his policies in the Middle East. Now, I think the American people are a bit more intelligent, and the world actually is more intelligent.
All right, we have to leave it there for the first half of the show. We'll be back after a few moments, right after the headlines. Don't go away. We're back with Fine Print. Joining us to track the elusive print from London, happened to be Hisham al-Sulf, member of the Executive Committee of the Council for Arab-British Understanding. From New York, we're joined by Mohammad Bazzi, Council on Foreign Relations. From Gaza, by Dr. Asad Abu Sharik, Palestinian political analyst. The heated the conversation on the Annapolis conference and all the repercussions and all the behind the scene. But now to a Reuters article titled, Arabs Doubt Annapolis Conference Will Bring Peace. It's all about skepticism in the Arab world. And it says, Arab commentators on Wednesday dismissed the relaunch of Israeli-Palestinian talks as a U.S. staged media event unlikely to lead to Middle East peace. It says, some argued that U.S. President George W. Bush's real aim in convening Tuesday's conference in Annapolis, Maryland, was to rescue his image after failures in Iraq and Afghanistan, or to persuade Arab states their deadliest foe was Iran, not Israel. Dr. Sharik in Gaza.
Yes, I think that this is the aim of the conference. As I said before, there is a tacit American agenda, of course. And the aim or the goal, ultimate goal of this conference is not to achieve peace, simply because Bush himself sent a letter to Sharon in 2004 telling him that the Palestinians have no right to return and Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. And then Israel can maintain the big settlements around Jerusalem. And then and he talked about what he calls a viable state, which means nothing. This is not a legal term or political term. It's not, he didn't talk about our right to self-determination. And then Bush gives every possible support to Israel to kill the Palestinians and to impose siege on us and to perpetuate its occupation. And the United States and Bush especially, they protect Israel through the United Nations militarily. Morally, through the veto. They used the veto more than 40 times to support Israel. And they gave billions and billions of dollars to Israel. And we are killed daily by American weapons supplied to Israel, by American tanks, by American warplanes. Bush, I think it cannot be an honest. Bush is a war criminal. He must be tried for the crimes he committed in Iraq, because he killed more than 1 million in Iraq. He used 700 ton weapons, against the Afghanistani people. And so this man, with his cabal, in the words of an American writer, William Cook, must be brought to trial. And because he is not interested in peace, he is interested in improving his own image in America, in local consumption, in trying to divert his real aim, probably to attack Iran, to attack Syria, and to strengthen his strategic alliance with Israel, and to make Israel a super regional power in the area, and to steal the Arab oil, and to dominate this part of the world. So America cannot, experience has shown that America cannot be an honest broker. America is in strategic alliance with Israel, and all our sufferings and pains come from America, to the extent that a man like Toynbee in this book says that if the Americans stop to use double standard policy and nonpartisan, and use nonpartisan line over the problem, the situation in the Middle East could improve. All the sufferings, all the pains, the problems in this part of the world come from the United States of America. So America is totally rejected as an honest broker, and body which is to discuss the Palestinian problem and all other issues is not America, is the United Nations, because we have resolutions that must be implemented, and who stands against the body which stands against the implementation of these resolutions is the United States of America.
Mohammed Abbasi joining us from New York, one of the leading think tanks inside the U.S. Council on Foreign Relations. I'd like to have your take here. Do you see this conference as an effort to put some kind of a feather in Bush's cap, his bald cap, if you will, in terms of foreign policy? No major achievements domestically, neither. Now, do you see this as a photo op, some kind of a legacy issue for Bush? Or do you see some bona fide movement to put Palestinians and Israelis together and towards a peace deal?
Well, sure. There's an effort to have a photo op. There's an effort to ensure Bush's legacy, which right now is in very bad shape because of Iraq and just because of the situation in the world in general. So certainly there's an intention here to show that the Bush administration wants to leave some legacy of doing something good for the Middle East. But I just like to pose this question to the last speaker, which is that if, you know, this concentration on the UN as the body that should convene this kind of conference or this kind of meeting, I mean, I understand that, but I think the problem is, I think pragmatically and realistically, the only country really in the world that seems to have any effect on Israel, that seems to have any effect on being able to get Israel to sit down to talks, to get Israel to make any changes, is the United States. I mean, both speakers have mentioned that, you know, a lot of UN resolutions are left unfulfilled by Israel, which is true. I mean, what makes anyone think that more meetings at the UN are going to lead to any progress? And I think we have to think pragmatically, and we have to think that.
Now, Mohammed Abbasi, one question that begs a question.
The peace process needs.
Right. Of course, the U.S. is a very strong country and has global clout, something it calls power projection in the world. But the one top question, we had this U.S.-Israel lobby and U.S. foreign policy, a survey done, and also a report, a paper done by Professors Mearsheimer and Stephen Wall, which argued that which is the tail, which is the dog, and argued that AIPAC, the Israel lobby, happens to be the tail wagging the dog, not the other way around. What is your response to that?
I mean, I think that's not really, we're not really talking about the Annapolis conference and the UN at this point. I mean, it's not, you know, no one is going to argue that the U.S. The U.S. does favor Israel in its foreign policy, and Israel is a very important, strong strategic ally for the U.S. And we should also keep in mind that there are some Arab countries that are also very important allies to the U.S. and that support the U.S. very strongly in the region, Saudi Arabia and Egypt and Jordan. who all participated in the conference. I'm just trying to pose this question of realism, and everyone talking about the UN
all
role,
right,
and
let's
the
go
UN
to,
role
let's
is very
go to
important,
Dr.
and the UN
Let's go
Secretary,
to Dr. Sharik and have his response to this question. Pragmatism and realism.
Let me tell you something. Yes, who hijacked the United Nations? It is the United States of America. It is Bush. I couldn't see, there is no... Who hijacked the United Nations? Who is the enemy of the Arab and the Muslim world? Let me tell you something. If, as you said, that the United Nations, the United States, were fair enough or were to deal with the Palestinian problem, why should Bush recognizes Israel as a state for a homeland for the Jews, which means the continuation of the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, which started in 1948. It means that the Palestinians will have no right of return, and the Palestinians are around 6 million Palestinians, and the Palestinians who are called now Arab Israelis are vulnerable to be dismissed by Israel. And this is racism, this is apartheid, and this is why America cannot decide for the Palestinian people. And of course there are other powers, and I am being realistic, I have to fight for my own rights, not to accept the domination of the Americans, and I call upon peace-loving nations, freedom-loving nations, all the world, to stand against this policy of America, which tried to annihilate the Palestinian people and to deprive them of their human, taking into consideration that America is all the time talking about freedom, democracy, peace, and these things. America is not. And to be realistic doesn't mean I have to waive my own rights. I have to relinquish my rights. I have to resist until I manage to attain my rights.
Now, speaking of realism and pragmatism, the question is, Hisham al-Sulh, do you see anything really changing in the region, strategically speaking, politically speaking, economically speaking, that entails and calls for some kind of a peace between the two Palestinians and Israelis when it comes to securing the United States' interests?
Well, first and foremost, in my view, is that the Arab world have to unite and have one definite, clear policy towards the region. And they should have allies in the region. And they can do that if they are more willing to become as a clandestine group. They should actually improve and strengthen the Arab League and have a clear forward policy towards the Middle East. If we don't have a clear policy, no one is going to listen to us as Arabs. And anybody can hijack our aspirations for the future. Well, our case is very simple. We have one just problem that hasn't been resolved since 60 years. Why are we going around and accusations and trying to dissect the Arab world into fragments and so on? Well, we should have one very positive and forward-thinking policy towards the Palestine. We have to have a free, democratic Palestine and a just resolution and a complete one in the Middle East. Then all our problems are resolved. If America and the United States and the United Nations are serious about it, they have to help us attain it. But we have to show ourselves first that we mean business, and our business, and we have the means to prove ourselves. We have the oil, we have the numbers, and we have the strategic location. So we have to be serious so that the world will take us seriously.
Now let's see how online media, The Progressive, what it has to say about Bush's side of the story. It says Bush takes Israel's side at Annapolis. It says at Annapolis, Bush loaded the dice in favor of Israel. He says, the article says, he put the onus on Mahmoud Abbas to dismantle the infrastructure of terror, something Abbas is not strong enough to do. Hisham al-Sol, is Mahmoud Abbas able to meet this expectation?
Mahmoud Abbas will be able to deliver if all the Arabs, as I said before, come together, have one policy towards resolving the situation, the conflict, and rally support of the West, Europe, United Nations, and the United States. And then if we have one policy, Mahmoud Abbas can deliver. However, this schism between Hamas and Fatah and so on and so forth, and the Palestinian Authority, these are all things that have been created by you know who, everybody knows about it. However, we have to get together, have one policy, and all of us give it and lend it all our support in order to work. So Abbas is trying his best, and I think he should be helped. And one of the most important issues is for the Palestinians to come together and resolve the situation by not having two parties but one. Perhaps the PLO is the best vehicle for that, and we should all support the Palestinian aspirations.
Now, one of the major deals here has been, all right, you give us security, the Israelis, and we will give you a Palestinian state, a viable Palestinian state, the word viable being the hugest fine print here. But the question is whether or not Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, is really capable of delivering what the deal is asking of him, with Hamas controlling Gaza, 1.5 million Palestinians there under siege, as Dr. Sharik alluded to. Now, let's go to International Middle East Media Center with an article titled Barak Once Warns Again. Let me zoom out a bit. Barak warns again of imminent Gaza attack. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak on Tuesday again warned of the likelihood of an imminent widespread invasion of the Gaza Strip. Of course, Ehud Barak now being the Israeli Defense Minister. Dr. Sharik.
Yes, of course, the Israelis are always planning to attack, and they have, ever since 1948, they committed many, many massacres, starting with Deir Yassin, and they, even today they killed some Palestinians, simply because that shows Israel wants what we call Pax Israelita. They are not interested in peace with justice, in comprehensive, lasting peace. They are interested in imposing their own version of peace, which is peace Israelita or peace Americana. Let alone the differences between the Palestinians. The Palestinians can unite, and these differences, of course, they will sit down, and I have information that I'm involved personally in trying to bring Fatah and Hamas together, and there are efforts. But the problem is not whether there are differences among the Palestinians. The problem is Israel really interested in giving us our rights? Let me take you back to 2000, when President Clinton invited Yasser Arafat and Barak, General Barak, there. Yasser Arafat went with good faith, goodwill, interested in peace, and then they offered him nothing. No for the right of return, not a Palestinian state. They were not ready to dismantle the settlements. Worse than that, they started also to build an apartheid wall. So the Israelis are not interested in peace, and the Americans are not interested in peace. That sort of peace they want to offer us is peace not with justice, peace with humiliation, to be in total control of our air, our crossing points, not to withdraw from the West Bank and Gaza, and to consider Jerusalem as the capital of Palestine. And moreover, they now talk about the Jewish state the Jewish homeland, Israel, as a Jewish homeland for the Jews all over the world, which means they negate totally our right of return. They negate even the right of the Palestinian Arabs to live there. So Israel is not interested in peace. And this is why the only way is to take the cause to the United Nations, to impose sanctions on Israel and to boycott Israel and to force Israel through the United Nations, as they did with Iraq and other countries, and as we did in Sarajevo.
All right. Speaking of the right of return, of course, this is pretty much what the article on Progressive had to say. It says, first, he essentially, that he being Bush, ruled out of order any discussion of a right of return when he said the final settlement will establish Israel as a Jewish state and homeland for Jewish people. That formulation was a precondition that Israel's far-right deputy prime minister, Avigdor Lieberman, demanded and Bush handed to him, even though this was supposed to be one of the core issues to be negotiated. Now, so what we have here is none of the core issues being discussed. The two sides get together, 44 countries, a photo op for the United States so far. First the party, then the peace. That's what they're promising. But amidst all of this, something very huge is happening, and that is the Israeli defense minister, not some official in Israel or elsewhere in the world, some analyst, the Israeli defense minister, Ehud Barak, saying, and back to our article, and we have his picture down here, Barak warns again of imminent Gaza attack. And further down we have his picture, and this is what he says, speaking to Israeli army radio, Barak remarked, every day, and here's a quote, every day that passes brings us closer to a broad operation in Gaza, adding that the invasion would not be launched until the time was right. He says, we are not happy to do it, we're not rushing to do it, and we'll be happy if circumstances succeed in preventing it, but the time is approaching when we'll have to undertake a broad operation in Gaza, the defense minister said. Let's go to Mohammad Bazzi in New York. Mohammad Bazzi, all of this is calm before a storm, isn't it?
Are you referring to Ehud Barak's comments?
Of course, the Israeli defense minister.
But, I mean, I don't understand your, what's your question?
If we take Ehud Barak seriously right now, the Israeli defense minister, this threat, if we take this seriously, and all the papers, Israeli papers are saying when he comes back, the operation at some point starts against Gaza. 1.5 million people right now living under siege, called by many a kind of genocide, which begs the question of our next article. Now, this whole issue of peace, what none of the core issues between Palestinians and Israelis, borders, Jerusalem, right of return, none of these, the wall, so on and so forth, none of these have been discussed. And we've had the party, the photo op in Washington. Once they return, if we take Ehud Barak seriously, if we take him at his words, do you believe that this entire photo op was simply calm before a storm?
Well, let's remember that Ehud Barak and other Israeli officials also have threatened an all-out invasion of Gaza in the past. I think one way to read Barak's comment is also something intended for an internal Israeli audience, and one way to read it is as part of the competition between him and Olmert, who we should also remember is very weak politically in Israel for various reasons. And we should remember that Ehud Barak would like to be prime minister again and wants to show himself as tougher than Olmert. So this could be rhetoric aimed at an Israeli political stage.
Hisham al-Sol, do you share Mohammad Bazzi's view that this is simply aimed for domestic consumption and nothing serious?
Well, I just want to mention something with regard to Barak. Some time ago, Barak said, if I was a Palestinian, I will definitely be resisting. That is, he will be in the resistance movement. Well, that says it all. But he Now he's trying to show that he is a strong man, and always the one who shows that he is strong and he's sanguine, he is the person that usually gets the top job in Israel. Therefore, I think he's trying to be tough, and he's trying to show that he is a person to be reckoned with, and that he should be, as a prime minister after the government of Olmert failed in South Lebanon. It's a war against Lebanon.
All right. All right. Yeah. Let's wrap up the comments. Let's go to Dr. Saeed Abusharik. Dr. Abusharik, very briefly, I'd like to have your speculations here after Annapolis.
After Annapolis, I think nothing will happen. There will be more talks with more procrastination. Israel is not going to offer anything, but probably is going to attack Gaza, and not only Gaza. Israel is going to attack Gaza and the West Bank, and the siege will continue, and the Palestinian will continue, and the occupation will continue, and because the Americans cannot and will not and are not ready to put pressure on Israel. And Israeli leadership is divided. And let me tell you something, the last word I want to say. The only solution for this problem is not to have a state for the Palestinians, a state for the Israelis, but one democratic state for everybody can solve the problem.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Our thanks to all of our guests. We're joined from London by Hisham Al-Sulh, member of the Executive Committee of the Council for Arab-British Understanding. From New York, we're joined by Mohammed Abazi, Council on Foreign Relations. From Gaza, by Dr. Asad Abusharik, Palestinian political analyst. Our thanks to all of our guests for their time and views. Of course, our thanks to our viewers for joining us. Always watch out for the fine print. Mm-hmm.